Okay, if I remember correctly, we are going to begin with a section on discouragement, verse 18 of chapter 36. And it's interesting how he relates everything to common everyday experiences, you know, as he goes through. He says, the stomach will take any food, yet one food is better than another. As the palate tastes the kinds of game, so an intelligent mind detects false words. A perverse mind will cause grief, but a man of experience will pay him back. A woman will accept any man, but one daughter is better than another. A woman's beauty gladdens the countenance and surpasses every human desire. A woman will accept any man. I'm not sure that's true today. It might have been true back then, but I'm not sure. You know, they got a lot of guys that I wouldn't give you a second look at.
I don't know if they're man or woman
yeah.
today.
I mean, I just thought that was a funny thing to say, that a woman will accept any man. But maybe in that culture, women were just so anxious to get married, they would take almost anybody, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. But I just thought that was a strange thing to say. But one daughter is better than another. If kindness and humility mark her speech, her husband is not like other men. He who acquires a wife gets his best possession, a helper fit for him, and a pillar of support, which is exactly what God said Eve was supposed to be for Adam, right?
Mm-hmm.
Someone who would be his helper and support. In other words, his equal. They're a partnership. And a lot of people back in this time when he's writing here didn't look at wives as partners. They looked at them almost as property. And so that was a far cry from God's original intent of what a marriage should be. Where there is no fence, the property will be plundered. And where there is no wife, a man will wander about and sigh. For who will trust a nimble robber that skips from city to city? So who will trust a man that has no home and lodges wherever night finds him? So.
I'm just thinking, God forgive me, we should send this verse to our Catholic president, and where there is no fence, the property will be plundered. Those poor ranches in those states.
Yeah, open borders. Right? It just sounds like it, right?
Oh.
So then we get into a section called Friends and Counselors, and that begins chapter 37. And he's got a note here on the first 15 verses of chapter 37. He says, prudent people, by definition, seek advice from others. But prudence must play a part in identifying suitable counselors, or as those you seek counsel from. It does not make any sense to seek the approval of flatterers or ask guidance only from those we know will tell us what we want to hear. A lot of political leaders do that kind of thing. All they want is a bunch of yes men around them all the time. Really useful advice is given disinterestedly and with a genuine desire to help a person make the right decision. An advisor of that sort is the upright man, someone who keeps the commandments. He is in a position to assess a case properly, and of course good counsel also comes from a well-formed conscience and from God himself when one sincerely seeks his help. So those are the notes on this. So we are beginning. Tina just walked in. So Tina, we are starting chapter 37 of Sirach. And the heading on that section is Friends and Counselors. So he's asking, who do you go to for advice when you need good advice? So he says, every friend will say, I too am a friend, but some friends are friends only in name. It is not a grief to the death when a companion and a friend is it not a grief to the death when a companion and friend turns to enmity? Of course, politicians see that all the time. You know, they'll You'll have somebody you think is on your side, all of a sudden they'll turn against you. Look at all the people that turned against Trump. Yeah. Oh, evil imagination, why were you formed to cover the land with deceit? Some companions rejoice in the happiness of a friend, but in time of trouble or against him. Some companions help a friend for their stomach's sake, and in the face of battle, take up the shield. Do not forget a friend in your heart, and be not unmindful of him in your wealth. When I read that, it reminded me of the parable Jesus told about shepherds who were just hired hands, not part of the family. Because he said the shepherd who is just a hired hand will run when danger approaches. Mm-hmm. When the lion or the bear comes to get the sheep, they'll run. They won't fight them off because they're not part of the family. They're not the son of the father. It says, every counselor praises counsel, but some give counsel in their own interest. Be wary of a counselor and learn first what is his interest. For he will take thought for himself, lest he cast the lot against you and tell you your way is good. A good thing to keep in, this is a good section to keep in mind, especially if you're looking for a spiritual director, because you want somebody who's going to look out for your interests and try to keep you on the right path and not just think of himself. So one of the biggest faults we see in some directors is that they'll try to force you to walk the same path they walked. You know, St. Teresa cautions against that. Mary Voss just showed up. We got a full crew here today. So that's something to be concerned about, because you know, she was always talking about how directors will try to take you on the wrong path by forcing you to go down their path. And a good director is going to try to find what the Holy Spirit's path for you is and then try to keep you on that path, because that's your path. And the Goons make the point, too, that every single one of us is on a different path, but we all have the same destination. So it's all paths leading to the same destination, but they're all different paths. And that's because God treats each of us individually. It's like we're the only person in the world for him. And so he's going to take us down the path that he knows is best for us. That's why he'll lead us into certain vocations in our lives. He'll lead the right kind of person to come to us when we're looking for a spouse. A lot of people don't ask for that help, and they pick the wrong one. And so it's good to always seek God's advice for that. So teach your children that too. If they're looking for a spouse, ask God's help. He'll send you the right one.
Yeah.
You may not recognize it as the right one at first, but he'll send you the right one. So anyway. So watch out for the counselor, lest he cast the lot against you and tell you your way is good, and then stand aloof to see what will happen to you. Do not consult the one who looks at you suspiciously. Hide your counsel from those who are jealous of you. Do not consult with a woman about her rival, or with a coward about war, with a merchant about barter, or with a buyer about selling, with a grudging man about gratitude, or with a merciless man about kindness, with an idler about any work, or with a man hired for a year after completing his work, with a lazy servant about a task. Pay no attention to these in any matter of counsel. So he's talking about people that are not going to give you the good advice. They're only looking for themselves. They're only going to tell you what they want you to do for them, or what they, well, what they think you should do.
I'm thinking of Saint Therese.
Yeah.
She believed in truth. God is truth, and she always asked God to help her in dealing with her novices. That she said all the time, right things that they didn't want to hear.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
That's true. I used to do that when I was teaching at Fort Belvoir, because we were teaching program managers about how to manage these big, complex programs and everything. And every day when I'd leave my office and walk to the classroom, I would always, on the way, ask God to help me just to say the things the students really needed to hear that day to help them in their jobs, regardless of what the standard material was, you know. And a lot of times they start asking questions, and then you could divert, and I'd always go with their questions, because
right.
that's what they were interested in. That's what they needed for their jobs, you know.
You know, you answered my thoughts, because I do the Carmelites, the newcomer group, you know, there's two or three sometimes, and we always have something planned, a few sheets that we have to go over. And many times they'll just ask questions or they want to talk.
Yeah.
And you let them talk, because they get out what they want. And it's, I said, it's more important. We give them the papers to take home and read, but let them. And I wondered, you know.
Yeah, well, it's good to do that, because you also find out by what they say whether they really are a good candidate for becoming a Carmelite.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Not everybody's a good candidate to be a Carmelite.
Yeah, exactly. Because we're the newcomer group. You don't have all this in depth.
Right.
You move on, and then you do. It's more important. They know Carmel and love it and move on, you know.
That's right.
That's helpful.
So back to Ben Sirach here. He says, verse 12, but stay constantly with a godly man whom you know to be a keeper of the commandments, whose soul is in accord with your soul, and who will sorrow with you if you fail. And establish the counsel of your own heart, for no one is more faithful to you than it is. For a man's soul sometimes keeps him better informed than seven watchmen sitting high on a watchtower. And besides all this, pray to the Most High, that he may direct your way in truth. A lot of truth to that.
Is that kind of like, do what your instinct is telling you versus what maybe a doctor tells you to do?
Well, yeah.
I shouldn't say a doctor, but I'm just thinking of a situation.
Well, that's true.
That's true.
You know, where there is an instinct we all have.
Well, God talks to you. God talks to your heart.
Yeah,
he does.
You know, and so you got to listen to that voice.
Yeah.
In fact, Teresa in her Interior Castle talks about, spiritual directors and all. And she says sometimes it's better not to have one than to have a bad one.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
Because you go to God and let him, because the Holy Spirit's your real spiritual director. Mm-hmm. All a human spiritual director is going to do is try to figure out what that Holy Spirit's, where you're sending you, and then keep you on that path. And so you got to find out what that path is, you know, ask a lot of questions and stuff. But always pray to the Most High so he can direct you in truth. And you always want to keep that idea of truth in your mind, too, because when Jesus spoke about the Holy Spirit, the Paraclete, he didn't say, I will send the Paraclete to you, the Spirit of love, or the Spirit of anything. He says, I will send the Spirit of truth to guide you. That surprised me when I first read that. Mm-hmm. I was expecting him to say the Spirit of love, but he said the Spirit of truth, which I thought was kind of interesting. So then we get into verse 20, true and false wisdom. Reason is the beginning of every work, and counsel precedes every undertaking. You remember the parable of Jesus and the guy building the tower? He said, you better make sure you got enough money to finish it, otherwise you'll be laughed at by your friends saying you saw something you can't finish. That's kind of what he's saying here. Reason is the beginning of every work, and counsel precedes every undertaking. As a clue to changes of heart, four turns of fortune appear: good and evil, life and death. And we're just getting into eschatology here. And it is the tongue that continually rules them. A man may be shrewd and the teacher of many, and yet be unprofitable to himself. A man skilled in words may be hated. He will be destitute of all food, for grace was not given him by the Lord, since he is lacking in all wisdom. A man may be wise to his own advantage, and the fruits of his understanding may be trustworthy on his lips. A wise man will instruct his own people, and the fruits of his understanding will be trustworthy. A wise man will have praise heaped upon him, and all who see him will call him happy. The life of a man is numbered by days, but the days of Israel are without number. He who is wise among his people will inherit confidence. Other authorities translate that as honor. He who is wise among his people will inherit honor, and his name will live on forever. I personally like confidence. He who is wise among his people will inherit confidence, because other people then believe in him. It's not just they'll honor him, but they'll actually trust him and seek his counsel and believe in him. So I like confidence better, but, you know,
What does this mean, but the days of Israel are without number? Meaning because he's talking heavenly?
Well, two things there. That's an interesting phrase he's got there, because he doesn't know that the world is coming to an end. Because Jesus hadn't come yet, right? Mm-hmm. So Jesus said, heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. So he hasn't said that yet. Mm-hmm. So all we know is that God chose the Israelite people. He established Israel as his place, the place where he resides on earth. So you can't get rid of him, right? Mm. He built a temple through Solomon, and all that, you know, all those kind of things. So it had a sense of immortality to it.
And the new heavens and the new earth will be on Mount Sinai. I just heard that.
Oh. Yes.
Yes, on Zion. So Israel in a heavenly Zion is always there.
So it's all
will be always there.
And God talks in other places about bringing the diaspora back to Israel, to the land that he gave them. You know, so there's a sense of permanence there. And I think that's what he's getting at.
And the New Jerusalem comes down from the book of Revelation.
I turned on the TV and there's the Jewish Messiah. It's some rabbi converted.
Yeah.
And I listened to it out of curiosity. And he goes up to the time when Jesus came. You know, Jesus is the new Messiah. But then that's it. Nothing about Jesus founded a church. He's like an evangelist.
Exactly.
Okay.
And he goes around the world converting thousands. Mm-hmm. Tremendous in Africa. Mm-hmm. But it completely stopped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I said, why didn't he read the New Testament? Because he acknowledges Jesus, but that's it.
Yeah.
And
Jesus founded a church and it was Catholic.
Right. Oh. it's
maybe you should call in.
I'll tweet him. You should tweet him. There you go.
Yeah, I don't think he gets tweets. So then he says, my son, test your soul while you live. So he's telling you to always do interior introspection. And that's the same thing Teresa tells us. Self-knowledge and humility are the two things you have to keep coming back to all the time if you're going to have real spiritual growth. For not everything is good for everyone. And not every person enjoys everything. Do not have an insatiable appetite for any luxury, and do not give yourself up to food. For overeating brings sickness, and gluttony leads to nausea. Many have died of gluttony, but he who is careful to avoid it prolongs his life.
It's funny you would have to tell people that.
Sounds like he just started a diet.
Maybe he was overweight.
So at verse 28 there, it says, for not everything is good for everyone, and not every person enjoys everything. There's a note here on that. It says St. Paul seems to allude to the first part of this verse. Not everything is good for everyone. Indeed, one should not compare oneself with others. It's also a lesson Teresa teaches. Every person should try to work out what is truly the best thing for him or her to do. And St. Paul says, all things are lawful for me, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be enslaved by anything. All things are lawful, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful, but not all things build up. Not all things build up the kingdom of God within you. So that's from Corinthians. Both of those are from Corinthians.
1:6-12.
Yep. Corinthians 6:12 and Corinthians 10:23.
Right.
So then he gets into chapter 38 here. And he begins talking about medicine. And so he's talking about, you know, when you're sick, you go to the physician. So honor the physician, respect the physician. Honor the physician with the honor due him. Other authorities omit with the honor due him. They just say honor the physician. But he says honor the physician with the honor due him according to your need of him. For the Lord created him. For healing comes from the Most High, and he will receive a gift from the King. So he's saying that God is the real healer, but he's working through the physician to bring you healing. The skill of the physician lifts up his head, and in the presence of great men he is admired. The Lord created medicines from the earth, and a sensible man will not despise them. Was not water made sweet with a tree, in order that his power might be known? And he gave skill to men, that he might be glorified in his marvelous works. By them he heals and takes away pain. The pharmacist makes of them a compound. His works will never be finished, and from him health is upon the face of the earth. My son, when you are sick, do not be negligent, but pray to the Lord, and he will heal you. Give up your faults and direct your hands aright, and cleanse your heart from all sin. Offer a sweet-smelling sacrifice and a memorial portion of fine flour, and pour oil on your offering as much as you can afford. And give the physician his place, for the Lord created him. Let him not leave you, for there is need of him. There is a time when success lies in the hands of physicians, for they too will pray to the Lord that he should grant them success in diagnosis and in healing for the sake of preserving life. He who sins before his maker, may he fall into the care of a physician. So he's looking at a physician as both a doctor and a counselor. Mm-hmm. Kind of like a combination doctor and spiritual director. Mm-hmm. So if the guy falls into sin, maybe the physician can also heal his soul,
yeah,
as well as his body.
You know who's like that? You know Dr. Gola?
I was just going to say, a Christian doctor is a good thing then, right?
It really is. When John died, he said to me, I have your back. He says, if you have any problem, you just call me.
Oh,
but he said, I pray for my patients. He said, I prayed a lot for John.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's so touching. I didn't know he was Catholic, but then later
he told John he was Catholic.
Yeah,
well,
and he said to John.
He was Christian.
I never thought Eleanor would marry a non-Catholic because he knew I wanted to be a nun. He says, I never knew that. John doesn't go around blabbing, he doesn't say, Gala got such a big kick out of that. What do you think, I'm prejudiced? So funny.
Wow.
He was a good...
I didn't know he was Catholic. Yeah. I know he's a good Christian.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So now we get into mourning. You know, you mourn when somebody dies, right? Mm-hmm. So he's got a whole section here on that. And in the Jewish faith, when somebody died, they would have this group that would come around and sing dirges and wail and cry and weep and everything else. They would just, I guess they found people who could cry on command. And so they would come and they would cry for the person and wail and all this kind of stuff. And Jesus got rid of them at one time. Remember when the little child had died or something?
Yes.
He says, that child's not dead. Get out of here.
You know? Yes.
So,
the wailing wall.
Right?
Yeah.
They'll cry
at
the wall.
Where they wail for Israel there. So the next session is on mourning. My son, let your tears fall for the dead. And as one who is suffering grievously, begin to lament. Lay out his body with the honor due him. And do not neglect his burial. Let your weeping be bitter and your wailing fervent. Observe the mourning according to his merit, for one day or two to avoid criticism. Then be comforted for your sorrow, for sorrow results in death, and sorrow of heart saps one's strength. In calamity, sorrow continues, and the life of the poor man weighs down his heart. Do not give your heart to sorrow. Drive it away, remembering the end of life. Do not forget, there is no coming back. You do the dead no good, and you injure yourself. Remember my doom, for yours is like it. Yesterday it was mine, and today it is yours. When the dead is at rest, let his remembrance cease, and be comforted for him when his spirit is departed. Two things there. One, he doesn't talk about where the spirit departed to. You know, although he does talk about godly and ungodly people all through here. But he never talks about the afterlife in this book. Mm-hmm. Never. And then he says, when the dead is at rest, let his remembrance cease and be comforted for him. Mm. So he doesn't really incorporate the idea we find in Maccabees that is a good and wholesome thing to pray for the dead. Mm-hmm. He says, let his remembrance cease. Mm. So apparently he's not in tune with some of those other ideas about what to do when somebody dies. I don't know if it's true or not, but it might be just from what he said before in the first part of this section, that he doesn't want somebody to spend all their time mourning, that he wants them to go on with their life.
Which is a good and right thing.
Which is a good and right thing.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But to pray for the dead, it is interesting. Maccabees was written at a different time.
Yeah. But Maccabees is older than Sirach.
Older, yeah. Maccabees much older. That's why.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that he doesn't say anything about
yeah. For
the dead, but I guess that wasn't an established thing in the Old Testament.
Were they in different areas that Sirach wouldn't have been aware of Maccabees?
Well, I think he would have been aware because he was a teacher. Mm-hmm. He had a school of scribes. Mm-hmm. So he was a scribe, and he ran a school for scribes. Mm-hmm. So he would have had to have knowledge of the Jewish literature.
You would think.
In order to teach the people. Mm-hmm.
Right.
So I just thought that was strange that he would say that, given what Maccabees says about it being a good and wholesome thing to pray for the dead.
You know, I often wondered, people say, of course, when they die, we know there's a purgatory. But they'll say, like, even when the queen died, not Georgian, you know, the queen's soul, by any means, but like, oh, she's at peace, she's at rest. But, yeah, we're in eternity, but there is a purgatory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but
you know, you're not at complete
it, so
peace,
they
you're happy.
That wishfully. Yeah.
That's because they're Protestant.
Yeah, that is just a blanket statement. They're at rest. They're at rest.
Well, sure.
And now a lot of Catholics do that, too, because a lot of them thought it went out with Vatican II.
Yeah.
They did.
Yeah. So a lot of people think that you don't really need to take a shower before you go to heaven.
Yeah.
Even though Book of Revelation says nothing unclean can enter.
Yes, that's right.
You know?
That's right.
So you got to have your spiritual shower before you get in.
That's right.
Yep. And then he talks about the office of scribe. He's talking about this because he is a scribe. He's got a school where he teaches people how to be scribes. And so he's talking about what is that office of scribe? What do you have to be aware of if you're a scribe? He says, the wisdom of the scribe depends on the opportunity of leisure. And he who has little business may become wise. So the opportunity of leisure means maybe you've got a certain amount of wealth and you don't have to be constantly working in the fields all the time. So you can become a scribe. You have the time and the money to go to school to learn how to be a scribe. How can he become wise who handles the plow and who glories in the shaft of a goad, who drives oxen and is occupied with their work, and whose talk is about bulls? He sets his heart on plowing. The bulls of the oxen, right? He sets his heart on plowing furrows, and he is careful about fodder for the heifers. So too is every craftsman and master worker who labors by night as well as by day. Those who cut the signets of seals, each is diligent in making a great variety. He sets his heart on painting a lifelike image, and he is careful to finish his work. So too is the smith, sitting by the anvil, intent upon his handiwork in iron. The breath of the fire melts his flesh, and he wastes away in the heat of the furnace. He inclines his ear to the sound of the hammer, and his eyes are on the pattern of the object. He sets his heart on finishing his handiwork, and he is careful to complete its decoration. So too is the potter, sitting at his work and turning the wheel with his feet. He is always deeply concerned over his work, and all his output is by number. He molds the clay with his arm and makes it pliable with his feet. He sets his heart to finish the glazing, and he is careful to clean the furnace. All these rely upon their hands, and each is skillful in his own work. Without them, a city cannot be established, and men can neither sojourn nor live there. Yet they are not sought out for the counsel of the people, nor do they attain eminence in the public assembly. They do not sit in the judge's seat, nor do they understand the sentence of judgment. They cannot expound discipline of judgment, but they are not found using, and they are not found using proverbs, but they keep stable the fabric of the world, and their prayer is in the practice of their trade. And then we get into verse 39 here, continuing with the same theme. On the other hand, he who devotes himself to the study of the law of the Most High will seek out the wisdom of all the ancients and will be concerned with prophecies. So now he's getting into what it means to be a scribe. He described all the workmen before, and now he's saying, well, how is a scribe different from all those people? He will preserve the discourse of noble men and penetrate the subtleties of parables. He will seek out the hidden meaning of proverbs and be at home with the obscurities of parables. He will serve among great men and appear before rulers. He will travel through the lands of foreign nations, for he tests the good and the evil among men. He will set his heart to rise early to seek the Lord who made him, and will make supplication before the Most High. He will open his mouth in prayer and make supplication for his sins. Some of the things to keep in mind when we read this last part there, he will set his heart to rise early to seek the Lord who made him and make supplication before the Most High. So he's beginning his day in prayer. And so we begin the day in prayer, and that's a good thing to do. You know, don't keep putting it off. Start the day with prayer.
And get up early. That's what speaks to my heart. Get up early.
That's right.
Got more time.
And then put God first in your life. Once, you know, if you get into the habit of seeking God, why are you bothering to seek him if you're not going to put him first? So begin the day in prayer. Put God first in your life, because Jesus told us, without me you can do nothing, but with me all things are possible. So if you always keep those things in mind when you're thinking about, when you're getting up in the beginning of the day, just kind of run through some of those things that you know are true that Jesus told us, and it kind of helps set your spirit or your soul for the rest of the day. If you don't do that, you get distracted too fast, and then you never give God a second thought for the whole rest of the day. But if you're looking for his advice all during the day, whenever you're going to do something, God help me. You know, come to my aid. Help me do it the right way. Help me do the right thing. Those kind of things.
I just pray, Lord, help me get through the day.
Yeah, well, that's the same thing.
You run out of energy.
Yeah. That's the same thing, too. You do that, you know. And anyway, it's good advice here to begin the day in prayer and then to seek God throughout the day. If the great Lord is willing, he will be filled with the spirit of understanding. He will pour forth words of wisdom and give thanks to the Lord in prayer. He will direct his counsel and knowledge aright and meditate on his secrets. He will reveal instruction and teaching. and will glory in the law of the Lord's covenant. Many will praise his understanding. It will never be blotted out. His memory will not disappear, and his name will live through all generations. I guess he's saying none of them ever got Alzheimer's. His memory will not disappear, and his name will live through all generations. And some of the scribes and holy men were very, very, very well known, like Gamaliel. You know, he was renowned for his knowledge of the scriptures in Israel. There was a saying among the Jewish people that when Gamaliel died, the spirit of the Torah died with him. So that's how much respect he had among the people. And Paul was his protege. The expectation was that Paul was going to take Gamaliel's place when Gamaliel died. And didn't quite work out that way.
That's why God chose him, right?
That's why God chose him, right?
Yeah,
because he was very zealous and his desire to do things. So nations will declare his wisdom, and the congregation will proclaim his praise. If he lives long, he will leave a name greater than 1,000. If he goes to rest, it is enough for him. So Gamaliel is a good example of that. He was even in the Gospels, if you remember, he was contemporary with Jesus. Because he was the one, if you recall, that when the Pharisees were trying to figure out how to kill Jesus or get rid of his disciples and all, he's the one that said, why don't you leave him alone? Because if it is from God, then you're fighting against God by fighting against them. If it's not from God, it'll die of its own accord. And he makes a reference to somebody else who had the same kind of thing happen, and you know, his bands dissipated and all the rest of that stuff. So, but he was a wise man. You know, he understood. Good old Gamaliel. And then we get into the next session, which is called The Greatness of God the Creator. So he talked about the scribes teaching about God. Now he's going to talk about how great God is. He says, I have yet more to say, which I have thought upon, and I am filled like the moon at the full. Listen to me, O you holy sons, and bud like a rose growing by a stream of water. Send forth fragrance like frankincense, and put forth blossoms like a lily. Scatter the fragrance and sing a hymn of praise. Bless the Lord for all his works. Ascribe majesty to his name, and give thanks to him with praise, with songs on your lips and with lyres. And this you shall say in thanksgiving, all things are the works of the Lord, for they are very good, and whatever he commands will be done in his time. No one can say, what is this, what is that? For in God's time all things will be sought after. At his word the waters stood in a heap. What's he talking about there?
At the beginning.
When they...
Crossing the Red Sea.
Crossing the Red Sea.
Sorry. He has a lot of references like that. He just scatters little things like that that are references to the journey across the desert and then the Red Sea. And the reservoirs of water at the word of his mouth. At his command, whatever pleases him is done, and none can limit his saving power. The works of all flesh are before him, and nothing can be hid from his eyes. From everlasting to everlasting, he beholds them, and nothing is marvelous to him. No one can say, what is this? Why is that? For everything has been created for its use. That's an interesting statement there, too, because everything that God ever created has a purpose. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, he would not have created it. So even houseflies and mosquitoes and chiggers and gnats have a purpose.
I see. I was just going to say, what is that referring to? But sure, some of the things that are...
There are some things that we just... in poisonous snakes. they've got a purpose.
Makes you not want to step on a bug, right?
But they've got a purpose. We don't always understand what that purpose is, though. Because some of these things bring a lot of diseases and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Is that their purpose, or is that just a happenstance? But anyway, everything has been created for its use, for a purpose. His blessing covers the dry land like a river and drenches it like a flood. The nations will incur his wrath, just as he turns fresh water into salt. To the holy, his ways are straight, just as they are obstacles to the wicked. From the beginning, good things were created for good people, just as evil things for sinners. Basic to all the needs of man's life are water and fire and iron and salt, and wheat flour and milk and honey, the blood of the grape, and oil and clothing. It's interesting, he calls the grape juice the blood of the grape.
Mm-hmm. It is interesting.
Kind of like a forerunning of the Eucharist, right?
Yes, yes.
All of these are for good to the godly, just as they turn into evils for sinners. So many things that he created, we abuse and use for the wrong purpose.
And so too much of the blood of the grape or whatever.
Too much of that.
Too much of that. Whatever.
Exactly. So there are winds that have been created for vengeance, and in their anger they scourge heavily, like tornadoes and stuff like that,
right.
Hurricanes. In the time of consummation, they will pour out their strength and calm the anger of their maker. Fire and hail and famine and pestilence, all these have been created for vengeance. The teeth of wild beasts and scorpions and vipers, and the sword that punishes the ungodly with destruction. They will rejoice in his commands and be made ready on earth for their service. And when their times come, they will not transgress his word. Therefore, from the beginning I have been convinced and have thought this out and left it in writing. The works of the Lord are all good, and he will supply every need in its hour. For no one can say this is worse than that, for all things will prove good in their season. So now sing praise with all your heart and voice, and bless the name of the Lord.
You know, I do wonder, though, I've always wondered this, these winds, mm-hmm. and from the Midwest where the tornadoes wreak mm-hmm. such havoc.
Yeah. Or California winds right now.
The wildfires,
this is what this seems to be saying. People say, no, that's not true. But I think it is, because you see it all the time in the Bible.
Yeah.
You mean where
God's
vengeance
is mine, says the Lord.
Yeah. Right, and I think it's easy to see that with California.
Yes.
Because there's a lot of things that are being done right there.
Yeah.
But when I think of all the places in the Midwest and the floods that were in Kentucky, mm-hmm. I think, these are good people. Most of good people. Why are they suffering so much?
I think a lot of them have turned their back on God, too. And you think of Ukraine, they were so evil. People don't realize the evil that was going on there.
Mm. Oh. Well, I mean, this is just like in so many places, the good suffer with the bad.
Yes, that's true.
We as a nation have turned our backs so much on God.
Right. I mean, with abortion, what is God going to allow to happen?
Right. It's all a result of sin.
When this becomes law, they're trying to make it law. Yeah. Come on.
Yeah. You do wonder. You do think that.
And maybe good people don't say enough.
Well, that's
compromise.
That's a consequence of free will, though.
Yeah.
You know, you see all this evil. You see people committing abortions and everything like that. And that's a consequence of free will.
Yeah.
All they think about is themselves.
Yeah. But why does God allow that free will?
Because he gave us the gift of free will.
But I mean, at other times when we're doing his will, he protects us. It's kind of like when Herod was going to kill the innocents.
Yeah.
He didn't keep Herod from killing the innocents.
Mm-hmm.
But he allowed Jesus to get out of town.
Yeah. Right.
Through the prayer. Or
the advice of the angel. Free will is an interesting gift, you know. He's never going to interfere with it. The Blessed Mother, when she comes, She'll give us guidance. She'll give us instruction. Mm-hmm. But she never interferes with the free will. Mm-hmm. And so, but she can pour out her grace into people.
Who pray.
For prayer, you know.
Yeah.
So every day, there's a chaplet to Our Lady of Perpetual Help.
Mm-hmm.
That I got from Mary Ellen Lucas, stigmatist up in Pennsylvania. And every day I pray that prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And I pray that she will inspire the hearts and minds of every single pregnant woman on earth to choose life for her child instead of death.
Mm-hmm.
Even if she doesn't want the child, even if the child, if she can't take care of the child, even if she can't, even if the child's going to have some kind of defects or something,
mm-hmm.
I ask her to please inspire them to choose adoption for their children instead of becoming a participant in the murder of their own children.
So the prayer is the anecdote to the other people's good, the other people's free will.
You can be preserved from their free will. You see, now she can pour out the grace into their hearts, but they still have the free will to turn their back on that grace and still abort their children.
Yeah.
But we're hoping that.
Trust.
But we're hoping that I'm hoping that she'll be able to influence enough of them that we'll see fewer and fewer abortions begin to happen.
Right now, it's increasing.
Yeah,
because they're all getting the pill. I talked to the people over at the center, and they said they don't have so many because everybody's getting over the counter
that morning after pill.
Oh, yeah, which is really dangerous.
Yeah. It is dangerous. Yeah.
And don't the Democrats want to make that number one issue in the election?
Yeah. I mean, it's really overwhelming Satan right now.
Yeah,
that's right. Well, his time must be getting short
because he's
very active right now.
Hopefully till Tuesday.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. We've got to pray more.
Yeah. So now we get into chapter 40 with the last 10 chapters. The wretchedness of the human condition. So I guess we had people in wretched conditions back then.
Maybe.
As well as now, you know. And there's a note here on this first part of chapter 40. From 41 to 41:13, it says, having pointed out the goodness of all things created by God, the sacred writer stops to consider the roots of evil and discovers them to lie in sin and the consequence of sin. His reflections show, as John Paul II points out, that the problem of moral evil, the most tragic of evil's forms, is also addressed in the Bible, which tells us that such evil stems not from any material deficiency, but is a wound inflicted by the disordered exercise of human freedom. We're just talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
So the disordered exercise of free will is the cause of all these different things.
What did you say this chapter was called?
It's called The Wretchedness of the Human Condition.
The human condition.
Wow. It says, much labor was created for every man, and a heavy yoke is upon the sons of Adam. From the day they came forth from their mother's womb till the day they returned to the mother of all, their perplexities and fear of heart, their anxious thought, is the day of death. From the man who sits on a splendid throne to the one who is humbled in dust and ashes. From the man who wears purple in a crown to the one who is clothed in burlap. There is anger and envy and trouble and unrest and fear of death and fury and strife. And when one rests upon his bed, his sleep at night confuses his mind. He gets little or no rest. And afterward, in his sleep, as though he were on watch, he is troubled by the visions of his mind, like one who has escaped from the battlefront. At the moment of his rescue, he wakes up and wonders that his fear came to nothing. With all flesh, both man and beast, and upon sinners, seven times more, are death and bloodshed and strife and sword, calamities, famine, and affliction and plague. All these were created for the wicked, and on their account the flood came. All things that are from the earth turn back to the earth, and what is from the waters returns to the sea. And then the next section is titled, The Gains of Sin Are Short-Lived. All bribery and injustice will be blotted out, but good faith will stand forever. The wealth of the unjust will dry up like a torrent and crash like a loud clap of thunder in a rain. A generous man will be made glad. Likewise, transgressors will utterly fail. The children of the ungodly will not put forth many branches. They are unhealthy roots upon sheer rock. The reeds by any water or riverbank will be plucked up before any grass. And then his next session is titled, The Things of Most Value. Kindness is like a garden of blessings, and almsgiving endures forever. Life is sweet for the self-reliant and the worker, but he who finds treasure is better off than both. Children in the building of a city establish a man's name, but a blameless wife is accounted better than both. Wine and music gladden the heart, but the love of wisdom is better than both. The flute and the harp make pleasant melody, but a pleasant voice is better than both. The eye desires grace and beauty, but the green shoots of grain more than both. A friend or a companion never meets one amiss, but a wife with her husband is better than both. Brothers in help or for a time of trouble, but almsgiving rescues better than both. Gold and silver make the foot stand sure, but good counsel is esteemed more than both. Riches and strength lift up the heart, but the fear of the Lord is better than both. There is no loss in the fear of the Lord, and with it there is no need to seek for help. The fear of the Lord is like a garden of blessings and covers a man better than any glory. My son, do not lead the life of a beggar. It is better to die than to beg. When a man looks to the table of another, his existence cannot be considered as life. He pollutes himself with another man's food, but a man who is intelligent and well instructed guards against that. In the mouth of the shameless, begging is sweet, but in his stomach a fire is kindled. Then it gets into chapter 41, the title of which is Death. He's covering all the bases here.
Mm-hmm.
Death, oh death, how bitter is the reminder of you to one who lives at peace among his possessions, to a man without distractions, who is prosperous in everything, and who still has the vigor to enjoy his food. Oh, death, how welcome is your sentence to one who is in need and is failing in strength, very old and distracted over everything, to one who is contrary and has lost his patience. Do not fear the sentence of death. Remember your former days and the end of life. This is the decree from the Lord for all flesh. And how can you reject the good pleasure of the Most High? Whether life is for 10 or 100 or 1,000 years, there is no inquiry about it in Hades. Then he gets into the fate of sinners. The children of sinners are abominable children. They frequent the haunts of the ungodly. The inheritance of the children of sinners will perish, and on their posterity will be a perpetual reproach. Children will blame an ungodly father, for they suffer reproach because of him. Woe to you, ungodly men, who have forsaken the law of the Most High God. When you are born to a curse, and when you die, a curse is your lot. Whatever is from the dust returns to the dust, and so the ungodly go from curse to destruction.
But doesn't that contradict all men are created equal?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, it doesn't seem fair that the children of sinners are abominable children.
Well, that was a very common belief back then, that the sins of the father were visited on their children.
Yes.
It wasn't until Christ came to teach us how individual our relationship is with God, that he deals with us as an individual in all of our dealings, both now and in the afterlife.
So this whole idea, too, of, down to the third generation and the fourth generation,
That's old thinking.
That's old thinking.
But old thinking, think as far as the sins of the father.
It's kind of ingrained in us. I mean, you know, when you think about, if you are born to a sinner, someone who's no, I mean, you
they're
going to
influence you.
That birth.
That's right.
And you are, right.
You're going to imitate your parents.
Like well, an alcoholic.
Or even if you don't.
Yes, yes, that's
but
true.
But like an alcoholic.
You can see how that,
yeah.
You can
yeah,
see how that goes down through the generations.
Right,
yeah.
Yeah. Right. So
sure,
it does.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure, because you, the parents are the greatest influence of their children.
Yeah.
So if they're criminals or ungodly,
yeah,
they're going to influence their children.
Mm-hmm.
If they're atheists and they say God doesn't exist, the children are going to grow up believing that.
Yeah.
You know, so
and by God's grace, of course, they may change.
They
would, and other influences
exactly.
May
you have to break
them,
that
cycle.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But
like
you got to break that chain.
And fast in with something. Because right. I had a friend in college, and this girl kept having abortions even after she, mm-hmm. after college. And Susan said, "Come mm-hmm. live with me. You've got to stop this."
Mm-hmm.
So she had the baby, lived with Susan after they got married,
mm-hmm.
and she said, "At least that's broken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You have to stop them."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But on the other hand, Ray Guarendi, the psychologist,
mm-hmm. yeah.
he always says you can't blame yourself for what you're, because everybody's kids are going astray.
Well, nobody
astray
wants to blame themselves. We tell our kids all the time, it's not your fault. But it is your fault.
But
you got free will.
No, parents
should blame
themselves.
Oh, right, yeah.
Your kids are going,
because yeah.
they do have their free will.
Well, right.
True.
Yeah, yeah, but you got to teach the kids.
Right.
You,
right.
You know, as a parent, you're the first teacher of those children.
That's what I think he's saying, but that only goes so far.
Yeah.
After they turn their back.
Right.
If they turn their back,
them.
It's their problem.
Right,
yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, you could just keep praying for them then.
Yeah, right. Like St. Monica.
Yeah.
I'm sure she gave him a good upbringing, but
yeah. Yeah, I don't know this other earlier part where he talks about praying, you know, getting up in the morning and praying.
Yeah.
I used to listen to a Protestant lady who talked in glowing terms of her parents who got up every morning
mm-hmm.
and spent like an hour on their mm-hmm. knees. Well, I don't know if they're on their knees, but an hour praying for mm-hmm. each one of the children.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
And I think, you know, that would be a very good thing to do, and it would be a good thing to do first thing in the morning. But I got to get to Mass at 8:30, and there's not a later one.
And you see results. But you could pray the Mass
right.
for that.
I do, which is a high offering. Mm-hmm. But I do think that, mm-hmm. as it says in here, the Lord mm-hmm. really does listen to, because I think you learn when you pray for an individual child or grandchild.
Yeah.
You kind of, as you're praying to God about it, God gives you insights that you wouldn't have if you weren't taking the time to. So I always thought that was right and good that the parents spent all this time praying
absolutely.
For each one of their children.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And those Protestants shame us by us not doing that.
Oh, yeah.
Because their kids do get great spouses.
Yes, yes. So.
We just don't think about what we're doing.
But then on the other hand, I guess, it sounds like the devil's advocate. I mean, you can pray for hours and hours, but it depends on the attitude of your heart. You can also say a quick prayer from the heart.
Right.
And it's, you know, I mean, I'm not,
mm-hmm. sure.
not saying one is right and one
right.
is wrong, but,
right.
you know.
Yeah.
Sure.
You cry out to God, and that's, you know.
So the mourning of men is about their bodies. That's where we are, I think, right?
Mm-hmm. But yeah. back in the evil, in the death part, mm-hmm. yeah. Mourning mm-hmm. of men is about their bodies, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the evil name of sinners will be blotted out. Have regard for your name, since it will remain for you longer than 1,000 great stores of gold.
Mm-hmm.
The days of a good life are numbered, but a good name endures forever.
Father Mike Schmitz, the Bible in mm-hmm. a Year guy, is doing homilies now on podcast,
oh, yeah.
and he's doing eulogy virtues.
Oh, really?
He's doing a whole series, I think, you know, toward the end of, but he's, every Sunday, the readings, he's pointing to, and he says, you know, a good reputation is so much more important than a good resume. And how many people, and of course he deals with college kids, that's
sure.
his work.
Yeah.
But how many of them spend all their time thinking about what am I going to do, what am I going to achieve?
Mm-hmm.
And he says, you know, but what are you? What is your character?
Yeah.
So I think
that's... And Father Brian, the other day, were you there when he said, our Catholic education is good, but it's useless if we haven't conveyed Christ to them and their poems. Mm-hmm. Were you there when he said that?
No.
I wasn't at that mass.
He was. It was Friday's mass.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's good.
That's true. The early one. We were still playing on the beach. So the Catholic education is good, but it's not.
Only to a point. Yeah. He said it's worthless if we haven't given them Christ.
Right.
Yeah, well, look, in our homes, okay.
Well, and in education.
School. At schools, too. Well, look what's happening to Notre Dame.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And others, you know?
True. And it's so many.
Kind of sad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not all. Yes. There was an Arlington Herald, the person who left it. Yeah.
My children, observe instruction and be at peace. Hidden wisdom and unseen treasure, what advantage is there in either of them? A sense of shame is the next section. Let's go ahead and do this last section, then we'll get into that'll leave us to begin with 42. Got a minute. Better is the man who hides his folly than the man who hides his wisdom. Therefore, show respect for my words, for it is good to retain every kind of shame. And not everything is confidently esteemed by everyone. Be ashamed of immorality before your father or mother, of a lie before a prince or ruler, of a transgression before a judge or magistrate, of iniquity before a congregation of the people, of unjust dealing before your partner or friend, and of theft in the place where you live. Be ashamed before the truth of God and his covenant. Be ashamed of selfish behavior at meals, of surliness in receiving and giving, and of silence before those who greet you, of looking at a woman who is a harlot, and of rejecting the appeal of a kinsman, of taking away someone's portion or gift, and of gazing at another man's wife, of meddling with his maidservant, and do not approach her bed. Of abusive words before friends, and do not upbraid after making a gift, of repeating and telling what you hear, and of revealing secrets. Then you will show proper shame and will find favor with every man. Mm-hmm. We should be ashamed of all these things that we do before God, mm-hmm. who sees all.
Mm-hmm. That's why these churches are being burnt.
Right.
It's sadness.
Yeah.
That's right.
So many.
Yeah.
So that takes us to chapter 42. We'll pick up there next time. Any thoughts on anything we covered today?
What did you say this last section was called? You have a section title in heaven, like
sense of shame.
Oh, sense of shame.
Sense of shame. A sense of shame, yes. So he tells us what we should be ashamed of, but it's always in reference to other people. We should always be ashamed to do any of these things because God is watching us all the time.
I wonder, you can't presume when we die, anything like that. But I wonder, we know Jesus now and we go to confession, but still, are we going to have that sense? Well, because we're going to have humility. So who can stand before God? I guess, but I wonder what feelings, that sorrow for sin.
Life after life stories.
Like,
to read life after life stories.
Yeah.
Well, it goes to the idea of every day, at the end of the day, doing an examination of conscience for the day.
Yeah.
Examine.
Right.
And looking back and getting an assessment of how well you lived your life that day.
Yeah.
And be honest with yourself. And if you did something that you don't think was good, ask for God's help to avoid it the next day.
And if you do it every day, then it won't be a big lump, won't be a big heap when you die because you've done it in increments.
But you also have to watch falling into the habit of thinking you're a terrible crumb bum person because you did something bad one day or something that you think God didn't like. Just say, okay, I'm sorry, please forgive me, help me avoid it tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And just go on with your life and just every day try to live a little better than you did the day before.
And he said your sins, he doesn't remember your sins when they're forgiven. Mm-hmm.
So, okay.
Thank you.
See you next week.
Could I ask you?
Sure.
With the sermon that Father gave this morning about unity in a congregation, I wish he had mentioned some things that caused him to say that.
Well, you know what he's thinking.
Well, I think what happened was somebody wrote a letter to the bishop because of what the bishop said about how he was going to incorporate the Pope's directive
yeah.
on Traditionis
yeah.
Custodes.
About Latin Mass.
Yeah, right.
The Latin Mass.
Yeah.
Right. And so somebody apparently wrote the bishop a nasty letter, and the bishop let the parishioners know. Maybe it was somebody in our parish.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, who knows?
Yeah, really? I don't know.
Yeah.
So maybe that's why he said what he did.
I think he's getting lots of letters.
I think there's a lot on social media,
oh,
too.
Yeah.
There's
oh,
a lot of awful
yeah.
stuff.
Oh. So anyway, I think he was...
Stuff. Yeah. You know, it's like,
I
just
think he shouldn't...
Don't
no, but I mean,
I mean, the bishop's doing the best he can. You know, the bishop's a good man.
I think so.
I like
absolutely.
Him a lot. Yeah, I love
absolutely.
Him.
Absolutely.
So he's got an obligation of obedience to the Pope.
Yes.
He's trying to do it in a way that fulfills that obedience, but also gives us opportunities mm-hmm. to do what we like with mm-hmm. the, with, as far as the Latin Mass goes.
Sure.
We still have it in a few places, you know.
Right.
So he's doing the best he can.
And I
you
heard
know, other bishops don't even try that hard. They just say, okay, we're going to get rid of it altogether.
Because I heard it, the Pope called the bishop because
our bishop.
He was being too lax. I heard that in Holy
yeah.
Trinity Parish.
Did he call all the bishops?
No,
or just ours.
I don't know about the others. Because
he was too lax? Oh.
Well, with this Latin Mass. See, Holy Trinity had a Latin Mass.
Yes, yeah.
Those people are furious.
Mm. Yeah. Well,
and the priests are aware of everything that's
yeah.
going
yeah.
on.
Yeah.
Well, Father McAllister did kind of slip in at the very beginning.
Yeah.
I mean, he was upset about the people who are calling out the bishop, but he also said something at the very beginning of that about the powers that be that are taking away the Latin Mass. And I thought, wow, that's interesting.
But he also mentioned, you know, when he was at the Dominican convent, he
yeah.
saw a uniformity
yeah.
in the way they hear Mass.
Yeah.
Which
so
he said is obedience. It was all about obedience. And look at how many saints have been criticized and they just accepted it.
Padre Pio.
Yeah. Yes.
It just
yeah.
comes to mind.
He's just talking, we have
to be obedient.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the Mass that they have up there at the monastery is the same Mass that we have right here.
Right, yeah.
But I got the impression, I'm pursuing this and I shouldn't, but I got the impression too, it's the way those sisters all were in uniformity, not going along with the Latin Mass, but the way they prayed at the Mass. He
yes.
said, you must be in unity with everybody in the
well,
Mass.
Well, he's talked about that before.
Yeah.
We
should all do the same thing.
In one of his previous homilies, he was complaining because he said when we say the prayer, we got some people saying it faster than others, some people saying slower than others, you know.
Right.
He said we need to pray in unison.
Yes.
And we got to sing in unison too. And I thought that was really, really funny because after he said that, there's a person at the Mass. Who tends not to always do that, right?
Right.
And all of a sudden, you hear, trying very hard to stay in tune with him as he's praying. And it was just very, very funny watching this transition, you know, because he was saying it loud so we could follow him in saying it. And that dawned on her all of a sudden. And you watched her slow down and try to start praying with him. You
and
know?
I think
it was just kind of funny.
Is his youth. I think he does not realize people are generally deaf.
Well, that's
Tom
true.
Does not hear
right.
Ellen.
Right.
We have told
true.
Her so many. I think that's why more people don't say the Mass with us. It drives you nuts.
Yeah.
Everybody's on a different...
To say the rosary with us?
Yeah. Say the rosary
yeah.
with
I think
us.
So. Yeah.
Early, there's like three of us. And I just think it's important, so I do it. But nobody else... There's only three of us.
Yeah,
give me a break. And that's why. Everybody's saying it in a different... Every church I've ever been in has had a rosary either before or after. Come on.
Yeah, yeah.
The
yeah.
rosary's so important. Nobody's
it
doing
is,
it.
It is important. I went to a funeral recently where it was a Legion of Mary funeral, so everybody gathered to say the rosary before
and
the
And they
funeral.
Do the Holy Trinity before the funeral.
Well, that's what it was. It was a Holy Trinity funeral.
Mm-hmm.
There must have been 40 Legion people
that's
that
right.
were there. But I have to laugh. Like you say, the rosary was not together at all, and it's because the one who was leading it was trying to get it in before the Mass.
Oh,
she wasn't going too fast, but she was going in a normal pace.
Or the one that's leading it is young and she's up front.
Exactly, but then there are people that, like you say... their deaf. They don't hear that they're not in sync with everybody
Tom
else.
Tom sits next to Ellen. Or neither one of them hears each other.
Yeah.
Tom is super slow and adds
Ellen
a lot of devotion.
Fast.
Ellen has a million prayers, so she goes real fast.
Right.
And everybody's talked to her. We cannot. She's such a good person. Tom is such a good person.
Right. Yeah.
What do you got to do?
Yeah, I had to laugh at that rosary. I'd be better just to say this rosary by myself out in the vestibule.
Everybody feels that way.
Well, the chaplain of mercy.
Same thing.
Now, the chaplain of mercy, somebody, I know.